Two men from different walks of life, both so curious, it drives them crazy. This is the Jack and Max Show.
Hello and welcome to the Jack and Max Show. I am Jack and this is Max, my co-host. We are thrilled today to be with Brandon Hofer, who is an entrepreneur, an investor, and a coach and a mentor. We love to bring on folks that have gone through a tremendous journey to be where they are today. And Brandon has a wonderful story and we're thrilled that he's here. And Brandon, welcome to the show, my man.
Yeah, thank you. And let me just say, it's great to be here and love kind of sharing my journey and my experiences with the audience here for the Jack and Max Show. My hope is just that anyone listening will grab maybe one or two things from the time together here they can use as an encouragement and an inspiration for their own life.
Before we dive into your background, I want to let the audience know that Brandon is an investor in alternative assets and has a mastermind, and he teaches people how to take their investments to a completely different level. And while that's a really important destination, what I want to do is go back to your early beginnings and where did this entrepreneurship come from? Where did this desire to teach people come from? Just bring us to the beginning of your journey.
Yeah, for sure. Tell you what, let's start in the middle and I'll go back to the beginning, because there was for me a very significant and very concrete transition point when I realized, okay, I'm done undervaluing myself. I'm ready to really make that transition, that transformation, and become the business owner and entrepreneur that I know that I'm called to be. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that have that gut feeling, right? Like maybe you're working a job, maybe you're struggling to start a business, whatever it is. On some level, you're like, I know there's something more beyond this. And for me, I can remember it very distinctly because I was, at the time, I was a personal trainer. I was working at the local big box gym, literally one of those name brand gyms. And I had clients all hours of the day. If you're a personal trainer, you've got clients at 5 a.m., you've got clients at 7 p.m. and everything in between. So it's long hours. It's not that great a pay. You're making an impact, but ultimately it's an unsustainable business model for the average trainer. And I can remember it was a very cold December morning and it's very dark outside at 4:30 in the morning when I leave my house to drive to the gym to make it for my first client at 5 in the morning that day. And I'm sitting there in the parking lot. The gym doesn't even open until 5 a.m. So I'm sitting there in the parking lot at 4:50 a.m., just like hanging out, waiting for the gym to open. And I remember just thinking, what the hell am I doing? What is this? I remember thinking, I don't want to be here right now. I'm destroying my body for the sake of whatever it was, $25 an hour or something ludicrous. And I just knew deep, I don't want to do this anymore, but I'm not sure yet what that transition is going to look like, but I'm willing to open myself up and figure it out. And that's the transition point. So what most people, I think, have some moment like that where they go, I don't know what I'm going to transition into yet, but I know I can't keep doing what I'm currently doing. And so I'm going to make that internal shift and then start putting the antenna up and looking for new opportunity. And for me, I knew I'm a coach at heart. I'm a teacher at heart. So it has to be something helping and serving people in that capacity. I know that I don't want to drive all over the place anymore the way that I was with personal training. So I want to start exploring some online remote work opportunities. And I know that I want the earning potential to be infinitely greater than what it was at my current gig. So that's all I knew. I had a couple of like big rocks, a couple of non-negotiables to make that transition. But at that time, I hadn't yet discovered what would eventually become a business in online coaching and mentorship. So to your question, though, like the beginning, like how did I even end up in that?
If I may, because I don't want to take you off your thought process, but it's fascinating because that shift that took place in you, you made the decision that while you didn't know what path you were going to follow, the path that you were currently on wasn't something that felt in alignment with you anymore.
Yeah.
And for people that are struggling with that and they know what they're in right now doesn't feel very good, and they know they need to make a change, I find that there are a lot of folks that grapple with these limiting beliefs that maybe they can't make a change. Maybe I'll fail. What will my peers, what will my family think of me if I break free? So what would you say to the person who's grappling with all of these thoughts, keeping them stuck?
Yeah. So the number one thing that I see, and this was myself included, but in a lot of the people that I've coached and mentored, there's always some element, oh, but I don't know how to do X yet. And eventually you just have to make peace with the fact that you don't know what you don't know, and you can't do something until you've done it. That's the nature of growth. If you want to get to where you haven't been, you have to learn how to do something new. You have to do the thing that you haven't done yet. And so you're always going to be looking at, oh, but I've never done that. Oh, I don't know how to do that. And that's the scary part, to where you go, I want to do this thing. I have this vision in my imagination for who I could be and what I want to become, but I don't know how to do it because I haven't done it yet. And that's actually a good place to be. Whereas most people, the average person, will use that reality as an excuse to stay where they are. Oh, well, I don't know how to do X, therefore I'll stay put. Whereas the entrepreneur or the visionary says, oh, I don't know how to do X yet, therefore I will throw my antenna up and start looking for sources of knowledge and information that will give me opportunities to practice the thing that I don't know how to do yet, in order for me to take that next step and do the next thing that I want to do. In my case, one of those things, which is what I'm doing now, is coaching and mentoring people in the world of decentralized finance, cryptocurrencies, alternative asset classes. But 10 years ago, I didn't know anything about that. Most people didn't know anything about the 10 years ago. And so how did you get there? It was me being curious, keeping my eyes and ears open. And then when I saw something, which was, hey, there's this new emerging asset class, there's this other world of decentralized finance, I don't fully understand it yet, but I have this unwavering belief in my own ability to learn whatever it is that I need to learn, that I'm willing to put myself out there, go all in, invest in mentorship and coaching myself to learn the process, and then over time, form my own strategy and opinions and values around that realm. But that all starts with that willingness to put faith in your own ability to learn whatever it is you need to learn. And literally, every human being, there are no exceptions, every human being has the capacity to learn and grow beyond where they are right now. Some will take that further than others. Maybe some have environmental limitations or whatnot. Like, sure, those exist. But internally, everyone has the capacity to take where they are now and to grow beyond it. But it always begins with that internal sense of conviction and just saying, hey, I don't know X, but that's okay. Therefore, I'm going to push to learn what I need to learn and know in order to take that next big step.
Brendan, was there in your upbringing someone or more than one person that was such a positive influence on you that led you to the convictions that you have today? And all of us know that those convictions come over time. But did you get a good head start by having people or your parents, somebody that in your life was very instrumental in who you are today?
Yes, for sure, my parents. That's the foundation of it all. But then beyond that, outside of the family, in my church youth group in junior high and high school, I had a very positive experience there. And there was a really great guy who was the youth leader, the youth pastor of that particular group. So super inspiring and showed us what it was to be a leader and mentor people. And then when I went away to college, which my degree was in youth ministry and adolescent studies, there was a professor there who I would call a life mentor. He spent time with me. It wasn't therapy or like counseling sessions. It was more what we would call now life coaching. But there's this guy that's way beyond where I am at in life, and he's willing to spend time with me and mentor me in that sense. So all those combined mentor type figures definitely instilled in me that desire. When I get older, I want to be that guy, the mentor figure, the coach, because I found those experiences so valuable, and I wanted to be that source of hope and inspiration for other people as well.
Very nice. Yeah. I think there's a part of your background, your story, that is wonderful to hear, and I would love for you to share where it all began through your missionary work. And at that time, you were serving and giving your heart to others, and you weren't in the mindset of business in terms of where it is now. It's fascinating where life takes us sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely the common thread for me that's run throughout whatever business or ministry or thing that I'm doing is truly always like coaching and mentorship. In my heart, I know I'm a teacher, I'm a coach. I love that process. I love helping people find those light bulb moments, and then they take that and run with it. And I just have to go, okay, I didn't really do anything. I was just present for that person. But ultimately, they found that aha moment within themselves and then were able to go and do something with it. But after I graduated with my undergraduate degree in youth ministry, I spent nearly 6 years in South Africa with a nonprofit ministry where, yeah, the primary goal for me, the primary task was to coach and mentor these young people who were taking a gap year post high school and who wanted to serve through the performing arts. So that was dance ministry, music ministry, a little bit of acting here and there. And we would perform shows all around the country, traveling all over the place. And the idea was we just want to be like a source of hope and light and inspiration to the people of this nation. And that's what we did. And I spent a number of years doing that. Literally, you worked for $0. Through the generosity of others making donations, I was able to pay my living expenses and eat and everything. I had my basic needs.
How did taking that job turn into 6 years? Because 6 years is a beautiful clip of time to spend working on something.
Yeah. Well, originally it happened, I just volunteered for 1 year on the team. I was like, hey, this looks like a great thing to do that I could apply the degree that I just got. And at the time, very naive in the sense of, I don't need money.
You joined the Peace Corps. Absolutely.
And then, of course, you get there and you're like, I do need to drive around sometimes and I need to eat food and pay for insurance.
Food is good.
Yeah, food is nice. It keeps you going and makes it all possible. But yeah, then just after the first year, I realized this is a great place. It is an adventure. Like, I've always wanted to go somewhere else in the world and travel around. And it just felt like a really good fit. And it was a culture that was different enough that it still was very like exciting and thrilling and scary at the same time. But also a good chunk of the people spoke English. So I didn't have to start everything from scratch. If you start even communication from scratch, that would be a whole different animal altogether. But the communication was already there. So I thought, this feels like a really good fit. I met a lot of really great people that I like a lot, that I'd like to continue to develop friendships with. And I just thought, I can make a contribution here. And I think for me, that was, for that time in my life, that was a big turning point where I can make a contribution here that no one else is really in a position to make that specific contribution. Because I'm the weird American guy coming over to South Africa and hanging out with this crew that was at the time probably like 95% South African people. And there were a few international folks like myself who popped in and out. But yeah, then I made the transition. Originally, I was like, I'll be here for 20 years. I didn't have an end time in mind. But then 6 years down the road, the organization itself was pivoting in a different direction. And I just felt that's not really the thing I flew halfway across the world for. More power to you guys if you want to do that. It's just I'm no longer interested.
Peace. Have fun. Have a great time.
Exactly. When you're not getting paid for a job, you have to be 100% in love with it and really be bought into the vision. Otherwise, you're just, why am I doing a job for free if I don't absolutely love it?
Yeah. Yeah. We could talk about parenting, right? Parenting doesn't pay anything, but you love the people or you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
No one's in it for the profit.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Even making the decision to go to South Africa, a country that you weren't raised in, and to make that shift took a lot of faith for you to do that at a young age. You went by yourself, right?
Yeah, it was literally just me. The way I stumbled on them is they had a small touring team in the States, and it was five or six of them from the bigger group. And I happened to catch the show, and then I talked to him afterwards, and it just snowballed from there. So it really was this, what on the surface looks like a chance random encounter. And it led to this really cool season of my life.
It's amazing. Think about your beginnings and then your middle and where you are today. And I'm a student of learning to gain knowledge. But what I find is even in my life, as I learn more and I consume more content, some of it I consume for the sake of consuming with not having an intention of executing on it. And then other things I consume, I execute on it. And I think that therein lies a big gap for people. It's one thing to gain all this knowledge, but it's another to actually apply it. Now, just bringing you a little bit towards the middle and where you are now, is that you had an interest in learning how to invest and participate in this alternative asset class. But you were trained and mentored by others, and you consumed, then you applied, and you began to have success. Why don't you share with us, when you started to have success, who were the first people in your life that noticed and you took them under your wing to show them what you were doing?
Yeah. So originally, when I started mentoring people in the world of decentralized finance, I didn't do it for compensation. It was literally just like a few close friends, my parents, believe it or not. And they were seeing what I was doing. They were curious. They were asking questions. And then I was like, hey, why don't I just come over? And I'll sit down at the computer with you and we'll just walk through the process together. So I'd go over there, hang out with them, it was super chill, relaxed, hang out, walk them through click by click the whole process. And then they'd go, wow, cool. Like I got everything set up. That was great. And then usually a couple weeks later, they'd be like, hey, I forgot how to do X. Can you come up? Okay, I'll come help you do that. And then a couple weeks later, what about this? And then it just started, and I was like, oh, this is not like you help someone once and then they're good. Most people, myself included, need like an ongoing support system in this space, because it is very confusing if you've never done it before. And I can remember the first time I clicked some buttons and sent large chunks of money via blockchain. And I was like, oh, is it all going to disappear? Like, it's super intimidating and scary at first. And then, you know, you get someone to help you and it's great. It works. I helped a number of people. And after I did it for a couple of months, I thought, I think there's something here. There's probably other people who are already connected to me via social media that probably want to learn this as well. And I thought, I'm going to put the feelers out there. And so what I did was I just started a free workshop. I said, hey, this is going to be 90 minutes. I'm going to walk you through basics, setting up a wallet, how to do it, how to look at different projects and all this stuff. 90 minutes. Let's see what happens. And I got like over 100 people to register just from my existing social media audience, specifically on Facebook. And I was like, okay, obviously a ton of people are really interested in it. So at the end of the workshop, I was like, I'll just do 20 people to start with. I can't handle more than 20 people. So I said, everyone, here's what I'm doing now. It's just going to be mentorship and guidance and coaching and support around specifically crypto and how to get involved and how to navigate it. And within the first week, all 20 spots were filled. So I announced it at the end of the workshop. And then within a week, all 20 spots were filled. I now have a new community to help just like that. Now I have to focus on these 20 people. And so I just focused on them. But after about a month, I was like, okay, everyone has their bearings now. And I have a little more capacity in terms of like available time. Let me take this to the next level, open it up broader. So rather than just my immediate organic audience on social media, I'm going to open this up through paid Facebook ads, through paid traffic, and let's see what happens. And then from there, it just took off.
Brandon, what was your first ever experience with cryptocurrency?
The first ever was, like so many other people, a friend. A friend was just like, hey, have you checked out Chainlink? So if you're familiar with crypto, Link is a very well-known cryptocurrency asset. And I was like, no, what is it? I don't get it. And he was just like, I don't really know what it is either, but my buddy told me about it and he made $1 million on it. And so it's one of those things where you're like, okay, if there's people making millions of dollars with this, then, you know, anyone can really, you don't have to be super smart. Now, if you have an ultra math background or something, then yeah, you probably have a leg up on everybody else.
But I'm an actor. I don't have that ultra math leg up.
Yeah, you had fun to say it.
Don't ask me to do math.
But for the most part, I was like, he's just a guy. Like, what did he know? What did he learn that I need to learn in order to make that same transition? So I just went on Coinbase at the time. I opened an account and I bought some Chainlink. And that was the first step. And eventually I realized, oh, there's all these other assets. It's not just Bitcoin and Ethereum anymore. There's all these other options. And then I started realizing, oh, people are talking about staking and earning yield and yield farming and earning extra and all these other like little nuanced things that I slowly started to pick up on. Hey, it's not just day trading. There's actually this whole world where you can apply legitimate investment strategies, but in this alternative asset class. But everything online is just hype, 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 right? It's like, oh, buy the Dogecoin and it goes 100x. And that's what gets all the press and attention. But over the last 6 or 7 years, decentralized finance has evolved significantly to the point where you don't just have to be a trader, buy low, sell high, and you're done. There's a way to organize your investment portfolio and then to participate in additional tactics like yield farming that produce even more additional income for the person who wants to be a long-term investor.
I know what farming is, and I have an idea. I know what a yield is. I have no idea what yield farming is. Can you explain it to me? Explain it to a six-year-old, please.
For sure. When I say yield farming, I just mean any tactic that will produce a yield or additional profit opportunity on top of, hey, my asset appreciates. Okay, so we're talking about investment principles from traditional finance as well. It's just we're applying them to decentralized finance, which is the next evolution of how people transact. In traditional finance, we have the concept of productive asset or unproductive asset. An unproductive asset would be gold. I buy gold and I hold it. It just sits there. It doesn't do anything, but it has the possibility to appreciate in value over time, and I can sell that for a capital gain. A productive asset would be something like real estate. So I can buy the real estate and I could just do nothing with it and hold it for 20 years and then sell it. I could buy it for $1 million and sell it for $2 million 20 years later. And I go, cool, capital gains. Yay, I won, profit. Or I could buy the asset, and while I'm holding it, it can become productive in the sense that I rent it out to someone who wants to live there, and now they pay me every single month a rental fee. So then when I go and sell it 20 years later, not only do I have the appreciation of the base asset, but I also have all of the rental fees that I collected in that 20-year time frame. So X times however many months that I collected the fee. So the asset itself produces something else. In this context, it produces an additional fee from the rentals. Another great example is farmland, like literal farmland. I could buy 100 acres and I could grow potato, and then I can sell the potato and I can earn some money off of that. But that's my crop. I also own the land. So I can buy farmland and sell it 20 years later, or I can buy farmland and produce something with it. And then I can sell the potato and go, hey, great, I can buy 5 more acres. Now I have 105 acres. Now I produce more potato. Not only is my total asset growing, but the rate at which it produces yield is also increasing.
It's compounding.
So in the world of decentralized finance, typically what we'll talk about in terms of yield is, hey, these assets that you have can, in many cases, produce additional profit opportunities. The lowest hanging fruit, the most obvious one, is in the trading fees that are generated. So if I'm a trader, I want to swap Bitcoin for ETH or ETH for Bitcoin, I'm going to pay a transaction fee for that. Who gets that transaction fee? If you're trading on Coinbase or Kraken, a centralized exchange, the business gets those trading fees because that's a huge part of their profit model. But when you're operating on decentralized exchanges, that exchange gets the trading fees, but then they distribute a portion of those fees to everyone who is a liquidity provider on their platform. So when you take two assets, pair them together and become a liquidity provider, the decentralized exchange platform is basically just saying, hey, Mr. Yield Farmer, if you will provide liquidity for our platform that we built, we will compensate you because you providing liquidity makes our platform more valuable to the end user, which is who we're trying to attract. So it completely flips the narrative. You're being compensated for providing a legitimate service. In other words, you're providing value and you're getting back value in exchange.
What value are you providing? Are you saying this decentralized bank, you are a part, a stockholder, shareholder, that some of the money goes back to you?
It's not quite that. You are providing liquidity inside of which people can transact. And the value you're providing is making that decentralized exchange platform actually usable. Because a decentralized exchange platform is just a platform. It can't facilitate trades unless you have liquidity. So the decentralized exchange wants and needs thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people to provide liquidity so that the platform is reliable for the people who want to transact on it. So the value is you're providing collectively along with everyone else, in essence, what is the foundation of decentralized finance.
Yeah, in comparison between, let's say, a decentralized exchange and a centralized exchange, look at Coinbase, for example. Coinbase has a corporation behind it. When they first opened their doors, they needed to provide liquidity to the platform to allow me and Brandon and everybody else around the world to be able to facilitate trades. So they started that company with venture capital and converted that into an alternative asset, which is cryptocurrency, that allowed us to trade. But Coinbase, the amount of fees they're generating as a result of all this trading activity is really what we're talking about. Because on the decentralized exchange side, those fees are being distributed to its users. I think of it, if we go back to the gold rush in the early 1800s, where everybody was rushing to the mountains to dig for gold, but yet the people that were really making the money was the people that were providing the infrastructure, the picks and the axes and the shovels. So I look at it in a similar way at what's happening on decentralized. We're providing the picks and the axes and the shovels, so we're getting that piece of it. It's phenomenal what that side of crypto is all about. And Brandon, I'm curious, it's a crowded space, cryptocurrency in general. And when people are looking to learn, work with somebody that knows what they're doing, somebody that they trust, in my mind, they can go anywhere for it. But really, at the end of the day, it's about relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
And so what would you say, as you're building your coaching practice, how much emphasis do you place on building relationships with the people that come into your program?
Yeah, and this is super critical. And it goes back to, you mentioned before about seeking knowledge and actually applying that knowledge. And this really is the foundation of it. What I'm realizing more, and I always knew this, but I'm being reminded of it constantly, is that the value of coaching and mentorship is not necessarily in acquiring new information, because that'll happen no matter what. If you're curious about something, you can find it everywhere. But rather, the value of coaching and mentorship is helping someone to filter which information and which knowledge is actually relevant for that person in order to move the needle to help them get what they want. Because no one just wants more knowledge for more knowledge. They want the more knowledge to get something else. And typically with investing, it's, I want better returns, but the better returns always represent something else as well. Usually around freedom of time, retirement, peace of mind, those sorts of things. So the relationship factor is absolutely critical, because if I don't know what you actually want out of this process, I don't necessarily know how to help you filter the relevant knowledge and actions that are going to get you to where you want to be. We talk often in the mastermind of the principle of closer versus more. And when you're always just seeking more, 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 you'll end up making usually risky, rash, and silly decisions because you're just trying to get more of something and you're not really sure why. But if you know what you want, then every decision that you make can be framed as, will this decision get me one step closer to where I want to go? And that's where the mentorship aspect and the relationship aspect comes in, is you don't have to learn everything about crypto. If your goal is, hey, I've got 50 grand and I'd like this to be 2 million. Okay, let's plot that out. What would that actually take year over year to get you to that goal, and how long would that take? Cool, now we have a trajectory. Now we have a pathway in order to get you there. So once you frame it that way, great. Now we can say, hey, you don't need to do crypto mining. Some people make money crypto mining, but you don't have to. And especially if your value is, I want low maintenance. I don't want to stare at charts 3-4 hours a day. Great. You shouldn't be a day trader then, for sure. So we can eliminate those two categories, and which are legitimate ways to make money in cryptocurrency. And then we can usually eliminate a few others in order to reduce the complexity. And for myself and the people that I coach anyway, almost always we filter it down to, you know what, if you just learn this one skill, which is yield farming, which includes a few different tactics, but if you just learn that one skill, yeah, there's a little bit of learning curve at first, maybe 3 months to really nail it down. But ultimately, you're only going to need to spend about, say, 10, 15 minutes a week maintaining those investments. So all of a sudden, you've eliminated the need to go and learn everything there is to know about every possible cryptocurrency or decentralized finance thing that's out there. And you've put your focus on, hey, this one thing is me participating in the infrastructure of decentralized finance, which is pretty cool. And it's actually going to get me closer to the thing that I want, which is typically some sort of long-term financial goal at the end of the day.
What's something a lot of your students have in common, or a lot of your mentees?
Yeah, I would say the two that I come across most often, number one, and this is very unfortunate, number one is they've been scammed in the past. And when I say scammed, I don't mean, oh, I bought the thing and the chart went down a little bit. That's a market. That'll happen no matter what. I mean, I sent Bitcoin to someone and then they ran away and I never heard from them again. Or I sent them Bitcoin and they told me my portfolio, which is fake, they told me my portfolio went up 10x, but now I have to send them another $10,000 in order to withdraw.
That, yeah, you got scammed. I could tell you right there. Yeah, bro, you got scammed, bro.
100%. But you'd be shocked. It works. Loss aversion, right? So they're playing on human psychology. So it works and people lose a lot of money and they come to the initial meeting, the discovery call. They come wanting to know more about, hey, how do I navigate decentralized finance, crypto, in a way that I can ignore and avoid that stuff altogether? And big picture, the real solution is, yeah, you need training, you need coaching, you need a mentor. That's the actual solution. It's not the short-term fix. If you really want to be in this for the next 8, 10, 12 years and make a lot of money doing that, then you got to learn what it's really all about. And that's going to take some time. And the scam, the people who fell for those in the past, they realize and acknowledge, oh, I was looking for the quick hit. I was looking for more, not closer. I was looking for, let me win in 30 days instead of let me win consistently over the course of the long haul. And they usually realize that and they're willing to just go, oops, all right, I got duped, but I'm not going to get duped again. And that's probably the most important transition, is admitting it happened and going, but I'm going to take a different pathway this time so that it doesn't happen again. So that's the one thing. And then the second thing is they're looking for some kind of, and they'll call it passive income. I don't believe anything's ever truly passive, but we can call it low maintenance income, meaning they have a chunk of capital and they know this money, I don't want it to just sit in a bank account because it's going to gradually lose value. And I'm going to wake up 20 years from now and it's going to have half the buying power that it does today. I don't want that. What can I do to create an environment where this base capital can produce additional income for me? And that's why this method is so popular, because you're able to generate that trading fee income, right? Provide the liquidity, you get paid, and you get to see it working from day one. Literally, if I provided liquidity today, I could check back in 6 hours and go, hey, I earned $10 or whatever amount it is, depending on how much capital you put into the mix. But you see it working right away. And then you can obviously extrapolate that out over time and go, hey, even if I get half of what I got here, I'm going to be sitting pretty.
Brendan, I would imagine the people that are inside of your mastermind are close to or at retirement age, and they realize that they may outlive their retirement nest egg. So having an opportunity to accelerate and add to that, I think, and you tell me, that's probably part of who you're serving.
Yes.
And perhaps you're also serving the younger entrepreneur that looks at the path that their parents went down, and nothing wrong with it, but maybe they say, okay, well, I don't want to work 40 years out of my life. I would rather accelerate that process. And by the time I hit 30 or 35 years old, I've taken back my time and I've got options in my life. Would you say that those types of individuals are who you're serving?
For sure. You hit the nail on the head. And when I say retirement, most people who tell me, oh, I want to retire, they don't really mean I want to just laze around and do nothing. What they really mean is I want to be effectively retired, in the sense that I'm not forced to work for an income in order to cover my daily living expenses. Because once you get beyond that immediate need, a whole new world opens up. You think more clearly, you're able to redirect your attention and your energy to various projects. That's usually what people mean when they say retired. But yes, if you're in your 50s or 60s and you wake up, and even your 40s, and you wake up and go, oh my word, at this rate, I'm going to retire when I'm 80 and my 401k is only going to be 250 grand. And they just know it's just not going to work. So I have to either work until the day I die, or probably more a better option is to figure something else out. And that's what we were talking about originally, right? It's like that moment where you go, I may not know exactly what I'm going to do differently, but I know something has to change. So whether it's starting a business or coming to grips with your financial situation, that little spark, that internal spark, that process is effectively the same. Like, you're basically just acknowledging, I want my life to be different in some way, shape, or form. Therefore, I must take a new action or learn a new skill set that will facilitate this new direction that I want to head in. Yeah. It's almost always related to the reality of retirement and ability to generate income.
I am thrilled that we're living in the times that we're living in. It's not all doom and gloom. We turn off the TVs, because this is a most exciting time of our lives to be living in the world of crypto and the internet innovation in general. And where has it ever been that someone who has worked 40 years in their lives can actually, in maybe a 2 or 5 year horizon, make up for any lost time? I don't know that there's any market out there that can actually produce at this level, quite frankly, as I study this part of crypto and the things that you're doing.
Yeah, it's literally never existed, other than if you're one of the few that gets a cool stock tip, like at just the perfect time. But those would be
GameStop.
Yeah, exactly. If you bought GameStop, or if you invested in NVIDIA 15 years ago, if you saw the future and you're like, hey, everybody's going to need these processors in the next 15 years, and your investment portfolio went 20x. But even then, you would have had to know that's the case. You would have had to stuff all your money into one stock. And we're at a place now with DeFi where you're still really early. People go like, oh, Bitcoin's been around. It's only been around for, what's the total now? Not even 20 years.
Yeah.
We're still super, super early, and we haven't even come close to the mass adoption phase. If you know the diffusion of innovation, the bell curve for social innovation and adoption, we're nowhere near early majority yet. We will be soon, but you still have time to get on board before that big mass adoption hits.
Being that we're close to the end of our time together, I wish we could just keep going and talking about this. Let's, for a moment, Brendan, identifying two different types of people who are listening to us right now. One is someone who wants to break out of whatever it is that they find themselves doing, whether it's a job or maybe they're doing something that they're not fully in alignment with, and they're stuck in not knowing their path forward. And because of that, they're just not taking any action in any way. That's one person. The other person is listening to what you offer, and they want to be able to participate or learn more about how they can participate. What would you say in closing to both types of listeners as a takeaway that you feel might be relevant to them?
Yeah. So the main takeaway is going to go right back to what we talked about before, which was every human being has the capacity to learn the new thing that they need to learn to make the new thing happen in their life, whatever that might be. It might feel that you don't have that capacity, especially if you're past 40 and you're like, I can't teach an old dog new tricks or some sort of limiting belief like that. But the reality is we don't lose our capacity to learn new things as we age. It might be more emotionally taxing to learn new things as we age. I can say that often is my experience, but it's certainly possible. If you're curious about cryptocurrencies, about the world of decentralized finance, all I want to tell you is you have the capacity to learn and grow and get involved in this innovation. So not too late. You do have the capacity to learn it. And obviously I'm biased because I run a community, but I believe that being in community with other like-minded investors is the one critical filter and transition point that's actually going to get you there. Because information is everywhere. We don't need more information. We need someone to show us which information is relevant for us, given our current state or context.
Yeah. And for those of you that are curious and want to learn more about Brandon's Mastermind, we'll drop a link as well.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. And the link will be for an application to the Mastermind. That way we can meet for maybe 10, 15 minutes, talk on a call, just get to know each other, meet face to face. And then we'll talk about some possibilities from there. But we'll make it super relaxed and we'll just allow you to take a look at what's behind the curtain.
Very good. Very good. I probably speak for Max on this. It's been a pleasure to have you as a guest. Always enjoy learning and bringing other people's successes to the show. We're really thrilled to have you here, and we thank you.
Brandon Hofer, ladies and gentlemen. Brandon Hofer. Thank you so much, Brandon. I've learned more than I know what to do with.
Well, this will be just the beginning of your DeFi journey, Max.
I can't wait. I was going to suggest the three of us just start our own decentralized Coinbase thing. Just call it Brandon, Jack, and Max base. That's where my brain goes. Let's be the bank, you guys.
Very good, guys. Have a wonderful day, and thank you all for listening in.
If you like this episode of the Jack and Max Show, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps more than you can know, and it costs nothing and only takes a second. So just do it, please. But if you don't, I won't know, so you don't have to. But please do it. It really helps us. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.